20 minutes a day, 365 days a year. This is the Pack-A-Day Podcast.
This is the Wednesday edition of the Pack-A-Day Podcast, presented by the Blue Wire Podcast Network. How you doing, everybody? Happy hump day, and we continue our NFL draft coverage here on the Pack-A-Day Podcast. It's your last weekly team that you have to be introduced to, and I have the pleasure of doing so. How you doing, everybody? I'm Alex Strofe. You can connect with me on Twitter at Alex_Strofe. And as we do for the draft each year here on the Pack-A-Day Podcast, we bring in the guys that know the most, and it's my honor to be joined the next couple of weeks each Wednesday by Owen Reese. You can find him on Twitter at Reese, R-I-E-S-E, draft. Owen, how you doing, buddy? Good to see you.
Yeah, man. Thanks for having me. It's always a pleasure as we head up to the draft here. Talk some big uglies, the most athletic men on the field. So it's always good with me.
The big uglies he alludes to, of course, are the interior offensive linemen, which we'll be diving into quite a bit in the next few weeks. So Reese, our residential offensive line expert. How about Mr. 22 also with us, Russell Brown, which you can find at Russ NFL Draft on Twitter. What's up, Russell? How are you today, buddy?
Fellas, I'm doing great. Appreciate you bringing me on and bringing me back, even though I'm not a Packers fan. But, you know, it's always fun getting to quote draft with you guys. And I like interacting with Packers fans because they're cool people.
Yeah, well, I appreciate that. It only took you, what, about 90 seconds, not even, to make Packer fans dislike you a little bit. But I think we'll get through it. I think we'll do okay because you're going to provide some awesome analysis for us here the next couple weeks as we ramp up to the NFL draft, day one of the NFL draft, only 22 days away. We're ramping up real fast, and we're ready to get into it. So on the agenda today, guys, we want to dive into four interior offensive line prospects. Those are going to be Quinn Meinerz out of UW-Whitewater and Reese, formerly a graduate assistant coach working with the offensive line at Whitewater. So he's going to give us some great perspective on Quinn, maybe the sweetheart of the Senior Bowl earlier this year. We'll also look at Landon Dickerson, a center out of Alabama. We'll look at Elijah Vera Tucker, probably the top-ranked guy we'll look at today. Played left tackle at USC, potentially a guard in the pros, but we'll take a look at him here in a little bit. And our final prospect today will be Creed Humphrey, the Big 12 offensive lineman of the year this year out of Oklahoma. So, guys, let's waste no time. Let's dive right in with Quinn Meinerz. Now, he played left guard in college. Looking maybe he'll be elsewhere. He played center at the aforementioned Senior Bowl earlier this calendar year. But a D3 guy, a guy out of the WIAC like myself, and we love to see it. So, Owen, we'll start with you. As I mentioned, you were a graduate assistant working with the offensive line. You know Quinn real well. It's got to be really neat to see him in a position like he's in.
Yeah, it's been a complete thrill. You know, just knowing that, getting to know Quinn over the 2019 season, the fall of 2019 was my first year at Whitewater, and then finished up this past December. Obviously, we didn't have a fall season this past year, but just you know, just being able to be around him. You know, he's a great character guy, for lack of a better word. I mean, he's not always a really big vocal leader, but definitely a lead by example guy, and extremely intrinsically motivated. And you know, I voted as a junior captain at Whitewater is no small feat at a program with that pedigree. So I probably should have known heading in, kind of, you know, what a special person along with a special player. And yeah, absolutely. Blew up the Senior Bowl, and I couldn't be more proud. I don't want to be too soapboxy here, but he's a great kid, and I'm extremely excited to see where he ends up here in the draft.
No doubt about it. And, you know, I called him the Senior Bowl sweetheart earlier, the handsomest man in that game. No doubt about it. As you know, quite a bit of things from him went viral over the course of the Senior Bowl. But Owen, big strengths for Quinn Meinerz. What sticks out to you, obviously, as you were up close and personal with him?
Yeah, I mean, the first thing that pops out, you know, and this was at a obviously very apparent at the Division III level, but then, you know, just as apparent at the Senior Bowl, is it's just his physicality in the run game, being able to generate movement, displace defenders from the line of scrimmage, I think is a huge thing. And I think that to a certain extent, it is a physical ability, but also, you know, there's a skill to it as well. You know, there's a lot of strong dudes in the NFL that don't move people off of the football like Quinn does. I do think it's a bit of a mindset, but that's the first thing. Just, you know, he imposes his will, you know, physically on the defender, and that really starts to wear on you throughout the game. I know he joked around that the defensive tackle from Texas, I can't think of his first name off the top of my head, but his last name is Graham. He joked around with Quinn after the second day of practice and kind of, you know, like, dude, like, can't you go home? Like, haven't you already shown enough? You know, so, you know, that's the first thing. And then again, I think the big thing too, like that I've been maybe even continually impressed with Quinn is his ability to pick up the playbook. I mean, there's never going to be a shortage of effort to prepare on his part. Like I said, he is extremely internally motivated. I don't think that anyone, he's never going to allow anyone to outwork him. You know, but someone that I think he would admit wasn't the biggest like football nerd or didn't have a huge grasp on football IQ heading into college. And then even as a junior, you know, when I coached him and through this past spring and fall was really kind of continuing to hone and improve his knowledge of the game. And, you know, for him to go down to Mobile at the Senior Bowl, and obviously it's a vanilla playbook. It's fairly watered down for the sake of time and installing to players that have never done it before. You know, I think his command of the offense, as far as the offensive line, making the calls, playing center, is a big adjustment for him responsibility wise. And I think he did that well. So I think those are two things, you know, moving forward, you know, you're automatically going to get from Quinn, you're going to get a plus run blocker the second that he gets drafted to whatever team he goes to. And then secondly, again, and it's, you know, kind of somewhat it is him as a person, but then also his ability to process and continue to develop, you know, as a football player, you know, if he does play center, I think those are two big things right away that kind of jump off that, you know, yeah, this kid was put in a not necessarily an advantageous position, but he took full advantage of it. And I think that's an extremely encouraging sign moving forward to whatever offensive line coach or offensive coordinator he ends up with.
Well said. Yeah, draft season means a couple things, but one that I love seeing on the Twitter sphere is RAS, the relative athletic score. I saw this come across my feed on Tuesday. 9.98 out of 10 for Quinn Meinerz. Ridiculous score on the RAS. So, Russ, we'll toss it to you. Quinn Meinerz, what have you seen out of him on his tape?
Yeah, I mean, I haven't watched him a ton because, I mean, let's be honest, there's not a ton out there on a player like that. And we didn't get a ton of all 22 on him. I probably could have hit up Owen and probably got it, but
I was going to say, I might know a guy.
Yeah. And you know, it's probably fault on my part, but maybe I'll do it over the coming weeks before the draft. But I do remember Owen bringing him up to me 2 years ago. And it was like, okay, man, like I'll keep an eye out and just, you know, obviously life happens and you move forward. But like Owen's been talking about him forever and just watching him at the Senior Bowl and seeing the practices and everything like that. Like I thought the lateral quickness was pretty good. And I thought the way he moved out in space, and again, you talk about physicality. I mean, this guy was literally putting dudes in the dirt. Guys that, you know, we always talk about if somebody had to bring up a weakness, they'd be like, oh, well, you know, he played at a D3 school. He didn't play Division I football every single week. But during that week, again, he was taking guys like from Texas and putting them in the dirt consistently. And I love positional versatility. I love versatility. I love the word. And it's a key thing for me with offensive linemen. And some of the guys we're going to talk about tonight, they are versatile. And he's one of those guys to play guard, to play center, to move around all over the place. It just goes to show how talented you truly are and the different responsibilities that come with those positions, because each position's a little bit different. I mean, yeah, your main goal is to block the guy in front of you, but at the end of the day, like, there is different responsibilities with everything. And when you play center and you're able to do those things efficiently, that really stands out. So, I mean, honestly, if the Seattle Seahawks were picking in the first round, he'd probably be their pick, but they're not picking in the first round. And it's just one of those things where I love the player. I love what I've seen from him. And I think he's going to go, you know, I would have to think probably somewhere in that top 50, top 60 range. I'm excited for him.
Yeah, it's not often you see a D3 offensive lineman in the first two rounds, but this is one of those rarities in Quinn Meinerz. Been a lot of fun to see his rise, and we mentioned, you know, there is that one knock, Russ, that you mentioned, right? He's a D3 guy. Maybe he hasn't seen the best talent or the best competition, but when you do what he did back in January, go to the Senior Bowl and kind of take the world by storm, that's something you have to pay attention to. So certainly been a lot of fun to watch the rise of Meinerz. But like Russ said, somewhere in the 50 to 60 range, is that kind of what you're expecting too, Reese?
Yeah, I mean, I selfishly, I want him to go as high as he can. Right. But yeah, I think somewhere around 60, I know Quinn is texting, when he texted me, his goal is he wants to be the highest drafted D3 player, ever. I don't know. Obviously, it's not up to us fully, there's not much he can do to control that at this point, but, anywhere from 60 to 75 or so, I would really start to think. At his pro day, his agent, said that he would be shocked at this point if he got out of the top 75. So that 60 to 75 ballpark probably.
Sure. The number to beat is pick number 61, the highest drafted ever D3 player. So it's doable. It's in that range that we're talking about, but we'll be fun to see. All right, let's move on to a guy that played center, has had a lot of injury issues, including an ACL tear back in December, and that's Landon Dickerson, the center out of Alabama. Was with Florida State for 3 years from 16 to 18 as well. Russ, we'll start with you. Landon Dickerson, what jumps out for you?
Absolutely love the player. I mean, how can you not? He's just a fun player to watch. Everything he does, from the interviews, the things that he does on the field. And, I mean, how heartbreaking was it when he, came out on the field and everybody, when he got hurt and everybody was out there for him. And it just goes to show the leader that he is. The biggest concern with him is obviously the four injuries in 5 years. He's had four season-ending injuries in 5 years. But his length at 6'6", and that size to play center, and, I mean, he's essentially the size of an offensive tackle. To be able to do that as an interior offensive lineman really stands out. I love how well he moves players. He's very, very strong, and that's one of those things where when you talk about the physicality of a player, you never want to see a guy lose ground. You want to see them be able to reset their hands and anchor, and he does it efficiently. And I love the way he communicates. Again, I mentioned the leadership. So Dickerson's one of those guys that I think if it wasn't for the injuries, we'd probably be talking about him as a first-round lock at this point. But because of the injuries, I mean, he's obviously not in that conversation as much. But love the player. I think any team is fortunate to get him because he's a football guy.
Now, how far of a drop can we expect, Russ? I mean, obviously four season-ending injuries in 5 years is certainly concerning for obvious reasons.
Yeah, I mean, I think you'd have to think somewhere in that second or third round range. I think he's certainly a day two pick at this point. If we're talking, top 75, I think that's probably a fair assumption at this point. Maybe he goes 82 or 83 or something like that. But again, I would be pretty shocked if he fell out of the first three rounds.
Fair enough. Yeah, we'll move over to you, Reese. What are the initial takeaways for Landon Dickerson for you?
Yeah, I mean, the first thing is he's just a joy to watch. And obviously at Alabama, right, like the SEC and NFL talent and all those cliches. But, he's consistently knocking dudes to the ground, especially in pass protection. I think, remember, Cole Kubelik does a lot of coverage for the SEC Network. He's a former offensive lineman at Auburn. So he spends a lot more time than the traditional media watching the offensive line. And I remember at one point, just the thing, I'm like, I swear I've seen this clip before. But if you go back, it's just a different clip of him taking as a center, if he's not occupied, taking another defensive tackle on a stunt or who's engaged with someone else and just absolutely cleaning up and knocking them to the ground. And I was like, wow, he's just posted a different clip the last four different weeks, because he does that so often. He's a fun guy to watch play. He's extremely emotional. Another thing is, this may be a small thing or inconsequential, but when a defensive lineman jumps off sides, he's so demonstrative and will point out and laugh and jump up and down at the D lineman for jumping off sides. He's a fun guy that way. We've seen, he's doing cartwheels and climbing up behind Max Jones at the pro day. So he's obviously a very fun loving, a big personality. But he's, on the field, he's everything you could want out of a center. He's actually really only played center for about a year and a half. He played, guard at Alabama his first few games there, and that's mostly what he played at Florida State. But he has played all five positions throughout his college career. But, he's a guy that, and Russ is right. Penei Sewell is very, very good. And this isn't really a conversation or an argument that I really want to get into. But, Landon Dickerson might be the best offensive lineman in the draft from, a pure blocking people perspective. But you know, he's torn the same ACL twice. You know, I had two other season ending injuries. It's extremely concerning. And it's a shame because, like I said, this kid really is that talented and that good. And I was really happy to see him at Alabama because over the past, I don't know, it's probably since Jameis left Florida State or even those teams, the offensive line coaching at Florida State has been terrible. Yes. So it's the level of talent that they get into Florida State and the lack of people that they can block is been extremely frustrating just as a football fan over the past few years. So him getting to Alabama and him flourishing like this, I couldn't be happier for him as a kid. You know, and hopefully he gets his look. I would be like, this is probably a bit early, truthfully, but like if I was the Cincinnati Bengals, I'd be awful hard pressed to not take him at 35 or wherever they pick, you know, to protect Joe Burrow. You know, like that's, if you want to emphasize that, you know, I mean, that's a big, like, get your center, boom, done,
yeah,
or guard, wherever he's going to play. But that's where I would probably start to really consider him, is at the beginning of the second round. We saw Miles Jack and Jalen Smith, you know, a little bit different injury situations, but similar, you know, that kind of damaged goods going that early second round range. I think that's probably somewhere around there would be about right.
Risk and reward is certainly the case with Dickerson. The injury is concerning, but you mentioned it. One of the best prospects, you know, purely in this draft, at least in the interior offensive line. Certainly been a joy to watch, been really solid. Russ, I do want you to respond to what Reese said. He said maybe behind Sewell, the best offensive line prospect. Do you agree?
Man, that's a fun conversation because I'm not really opposed to the idea of it because he is truthfully so good and he's just one of those guys that like he said, he's always looking for work. He's always on the move. He's always trying to do the right thing in the middle of the field for his offensive line. And to be that fun of a player is, I love the fit of him going to potentially like Cincinnati. I love that. That's tough. The only thing that I would, you know, necessarily disagree with is just simply the position. If we're talking like maybe position value, the value of the position. But again, I think all five positions on the offensive line have some value to it. But if Penei Sewell can become that, you know, franchise left tackle for you, I think that might hold a little bit more value to it. But again, it's close. I mean, his tape is phenomenal. His tape is some of the best for any interior offensive lineman I've watched in recent years, just from, you know, when he's healthy and he's on the field. So that's close. I'm going to just lead towards no, though. Go ahead and say it.
Fair enough. I mean, you value him right up there, and that's totally fair. But you guys both mentioned the Cincinnati fit. Guys, I think any offensive lineman fits in fine at Cincinnati because Joe Burrow literally could have had a workers' compensation lawsuit on his hands last year the way he got beat up in his rookie year in Cincinnati. So Dickerson, certainly a fun one. That was a fun one to break down. Nice stuff there. Let's go to another fun one. That's going to be a ton of fun to break down. Russ, you mentioned the word versatile earlier. That's literally the only note I have for Elijah Vera Tucker. He played left tackle at USC, maybe a guard in the pros. I'll get your guys' take on that. But versatility, 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 Russ.
Yeah, he's one of those guys. I mean, he's got experience at left guard, right guard, and left tackle for USC. He played left tackle this past year. He played left guard the year before. So that positional versatility is key. I mean, I think you can plug and play him pretty much anywhere on offensive line, and he should have success. There's going to be the short arm argument, and I mean, he's under 33 inches as far as arm length goes. I think it was like 32 and a quarter, if anybody wants to get exacts there. But I mean, active hands, he resets quickly. I love the fluidity and weight transfer from his post foot to his set foot. I think he does a tremendous job there, and to be able to have that flexibility and that ability to just move around like that is so key. I thought he climbed really well and operated in space. So he's one of those guys. Again, I think you plug and play him at left guard or right guard. And teams like Minnesota, and obviously being that this is a Packers podcast and I'm a Lions fan, so we got to worry about Minnesota at 14. I think he makes a ton of sense for them at 14. I wouldn't be surprised if New England fell in love with him at 15. I truthfully think he's a top 20 pick, and I love his skill set. And again, one of those guys that if we had to like rank some of the best pure talent. I think you get a lot to work with and potential, but also just his film is a lot of fun to watch.
No doubt about it. 32 and an eighth, Russ. You were real close. 32 and an eighth for the arms. Owen, we'll jump over to you. Elijah Vera Tucker, certainly a really, really fun offensive line prospect.
No, but he's an impressive player. From the aspect, you can really tell that it took him a couple games to adjust to the space at tackle coming from guard. You know, there's a guy on Twitter a few years ago who I always use this, a former Twitter user. But he always compared that playing interior offensive line is like a mosh pit and playing a tackle is like a ballet, right? There's so much more space and time you have to utilize out there. Everything happens slower on the outside than it does in close quarters. And I think that's something that you could tell he adjusted to. But you can tell he's ready to go. He jump sets a lot. He really kind of wants to kind of bring the fight to the D lineman, which I think that probably lends him to ending back up at guard in the NFL. I do think one thing, and I don't mean this in a bad way either, he's more of a grabber than a puncher, which I think is going to, acclimate him well into the NFL instead of trying to simply overpower everybody, right, kind of corral them. You see a lot of that with, I think there's a YouTube video about how the Packers, quote unquote, get away with holding every play. But you see guys like David Bakhtiari or Brian Bulaga is a really, really good one. You can tell, are there more grabbers than strikers or punchers? And I think that Vera Tucker is in a similar mold of that. I think that's something that, we kind of talked about this. I don't think he gets to Green Bay, but for a team that is looking for interior offensive line answers, and with a guy like Elton Jenkins at left guard who played center in college, I think the Packers are probably sprinting to the stand with Elijah Vera Tucker's name on the card. If he gets to 29, and I think you plug and play him at left guard, and I just think you don't worry about it. But he's a guy to me, like I said, he's moves like a guard, or he's very athletic, but he plays like a guard and he moves like a guard. And to me, I think that. Mm-hmm. He took one for the team and played a tackle for USC, but I think moving forward is, his translation is pretty straightforward. If a team really kind of fell in love with him there, I mean, I don't hate the concept of like putting him at tackle and letting him fail first before you necessarily move him inside. But I mean, to me, if I'm drafting him, he's playing left guard and he's going to be a really good one for a long time.
I don't mean to cut off here. I got a question for Owen on this, and I love your assessment of saying he's got a, kind of that grabber's mentality. Do you think that's got anything to do with the fact that, when he played left tackle, and this happened a lot when he was playing left tackle, Austin Jackson played there last year. He loved using a snatch trap technique, and I wonder if that's just something maybe like their offensive line tries to teach, and maybe that's something that he was trying to grasp. Do you think that has anything to do with that at all, and he just couldn't get it done because he doesn't have long enough arms, I don't know. I think I'm probably wrong on this. I'm probably way off, but do you think that has anything to do with it?
No, I certainly think the arm length has something to do with it. As far as, especially the more advanced levels of offensive line play and the more cerebral these guys are, what you can want to accomplish, but knowing what you want to do and being able to do it can at times be two different things. Or, mm-hmm. And especially if you're playing a longer defensive lineman, it's awful tough to get in there sometimes. And that's where I think he wants to play close because he knows he doesn't have super long arms. So I think that's a guy a situation where, he can kind of take advantage of that. But yeah, I know what you're talking about with the Jackson thing. But yeah, Jackson was 6'6", and I had longer arms for sure.
Yeah.
I think it could very well could be a coaching point, but at a certain point, I think it's just kind of a play style and kind of how he wants to do. A lot of people, even at guard, right? And I don't mean to extend this. We don't want to go over time here. But a lot of guards, and this is how I played as well, was I was not a super punishing, I'm going to punch you in the chest plate and take your breath away. I'm much more kind of grab and kind of wrangle you, kind of figure out, let you go where you want to go. And then I'll just shield you. And that's kind of where I don't want to say finesse, cause it's not, but that's much more of a thing for me. I don't think Vera Tucker is going to, drive anybody 6-7 yards back and put him in the dirt, but you can get some initial movement and then really just kind of be really smart and know how to position his body and use that athleticism. I think that's more his wheelhouse.
Totally fair. I do want to ask one more thing on Vera Tucker real quick, because I think, you know, we brought up the Packers' depth, a little bit concerning, something they'll definitely address, at least we anticipate, in the draft later this month. Is there a number in the first round where Vera Tucker drops to that you think Brian Gutekunst needs to move up and get this guy, or is this somebody that maybe you don't go out of your way to get? We know Gutekunst has a history of trading up in the first round, so is there a number for Elijah Vera Tucker where you'd be sitting on your couch and saying, holy crap, Gutekunst, go get this guy?
I would hesitate to say, I don't know, maybe I'm not making the decisions here. I would hesitate to say that. You know, just because of the depth of this class, and at a certain point, like if he was like far and away the Packers' top target, and he got past maybe like 21 or 2.
Yep, maybe, that's right where I was gonna say.
You know,
right
but there. Like, I mean, if it gets to 24 or 5, I'd probably rather try to let it ride out and do whatever. Because like, and this is a different conversation, but if at 29, if the Packers took Alex Leatherwood from Alabama, who is a left tackle for Alabama, but has also played guard for them as well, like that's someone that I could see them saying, like, well, we're just going to plop him in at guard. And I don't think there's a ton of drop there, right? Like, I do think Vera Tucker is a better player, but so that's kind of where I'm more apprehensive. If they are 100% hell-bent on taking Vera Tucker early 20s, you know, but like if it gets any more past that, like, I wouldn't even rather, you know, take the risk of, you know, I'd kind of let it ride out and see where it goes, because the closer it gets, it's almost like one of the things, like, well, what's the point? Like, what are we going to give up at a certain point here? So, and maybe I'm backwards and maybe that's the wrong way to think about it, but I would be more like, if you're not going to be hyper aggressive about it, I just wouldn't even worry about it.
Fair enough. Russ, you're in the same boat, it sounds.
Yeah. If he was my top player by a landslide, then yeah, obviously 21, 22, I'm running to the podium, making the call and saying, hey, give me this, this, and that, and I'll do this for you. But ultimately, yeah, I would let it ride. I would, because again, realistically, I don't think he's going to slide, but it could be wrong. But yeah, no, I would definitely go with that route. Alex Leatherwood's a great choice. I think Deonte Brown is also a really nice choice. Trey Smith, even out of Tennessee, if everything checks out and he can fix just some things with his lower body, I think he's a really fun player as well. So it's just a fun offensive line group altogether.
It really is. We're going to dive into it the next couple of Wednesdays. And this has already been a lot of fun. We got one more guy I want to dive into, but the rest of this month going to be a lot of fun to break down some of these interior offensive linemen. Let's get to our last prospect for today, and we're talking about accolades here with maybe the most badass name we're talking about. How about Creed Humphrey? That's a name. Center out of Oklahoma. He's a freshman All-American in 2018. He's Big 12 co-offensive lineman of the year in 2019. He was the Big 12 solo offensive lineman of the year in 2020, as well as a first-team Big 12 selection. Accolades, 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 and a great name, Creed Humphrey. Owen, what do we see out of the Oklahoman Humphrey?
So he's a guy that, you know, if you've been following the draft, you've seen quite a bit. You know, you kind of been wondering, you wondered if he was going to come out last year, and he kind of surprised and went back. He's a guy, he's been, you know, obviously you mentioned all those accolades. Started as a redshirt freshman in 2018 on an offensive line where the other four players all got drafted, including Orlando Brown. You know, I think it was the highest drafted, the tackle from Baltimore. You know, very well coached. Bill Bedenbaugh is one of the best offensive line coaches in the country, pro or college. So he had Oklahoma there. You know, he's been taught right. And we mentioned the RAS, the relative athletic score, for Quinn earlier. Quinn is at center, the second most athletic center to ever test out in that formula. The only guy in front of him was Creed Humphrey. So a guy that, and truthfully, like when I watched his film, did not jump off the page as this guy will test as the most athletic center in the last 24 years or whatever, or 30, however many years that the system goes back, but he did. And so he's a guy that he's extremely polished. They run a little bit of everything at Oklahoma. They run a lot of like GT, gap counter stuff, which is really interesting to watch. The only thing that I struggle with at times with Big 12 offensive linemen, and this is no one's fault in particular, but like, pass protection eval in the Big 12 can be often difficult because there's so many three-man fronts and extremely, like, I don't want to say passive again, but there's so many teams in the Big 12 that consistently drop 7 and 8 guys that more so a lot of the defensive linemen are just, like, truthfully, like, space eating. and kind of just trying to occupy the offensive linemen rather than truthfully rush them. So I think that's something that, like, for me personally, I struggle to eval of some Big 12 guys at times. But Humphrey's a guy that it's one of the, you know, one of the most, like, easy evals everywhere else. And there are no glaring weaknesses or flaws. You know, he's been extremely well coached. He's a 3-year starter at a very good program. He's a guy that was a 4th-year junior that went to the Senior Bowl. You know, so he's a guy, I mean, he's as clean of a prospect as you can have outside of that. And again, like I said, then I wouldn't have guessed that he was one of the most athletic offensive linemen to test ever, but then he ended up doing that. So, I mean, to me, he's a guy that, you know, or in that early second round range, he's kind of fallen off. I think a year or so ago, he might have been in the top 15 of mock drafts. And maybe, you know, as far as we know, some team in the mid to late first round is going to still value him that way. But he's a guy that, and I think that early the second round probably comes off the board, and someone, you know, a team we mentioned earlier with Minnesota, if they don't go offensive line in the first round, I think that he's a guy that they could really be targeting in the mid second round. That would be a slam dunk for them. They tried with Garrett Bradbury a couple years ago. They tried with Pat Elflein a couple years ago. They haven't really found that kind of plug and play stalwart player there. I think Humphrey could be a guy there. And like I said, kind of give the Packers problems for the next 10 to 12 years.
Super, super high praise from Owen on Creed Humphrey. Russ, you feeling similar?
Yeah, absolutely. I like the fit too there to end it in with Minnesota. I mean, even with Drew Samia, who they drafted to play guard, I mean, you get some familiarity there from Samia to Humphrey, and maybe those two guys can work together and it can kind of shore up some of their offensive line. But yeah, I mean, he's a really clean prospect. Creed is one of those guys, like Owen mentioned, was really in that top 15, top 25 of mock drafts in the summer. And we get through the season and now he's, you know, really fallen off the radar. But I, like he said, I would have never guessed he would have been the most athletic center. And when I'm not a big pro comparison guy, but when I wrote it down, I was like, wow, you know, he kind of reminds me a little bit of like Cody Whitehair in a sense. And maybe he could do some of the things there and play some of the positional versatility there of playing guard and center at the NFL level. And he's, again, one of those guys that tested out of the charts. I mean, it's just incredible. But I love the snap-to-step quickness that he has. He's very, you know, quick laterally, good hand placement. And while I'll agree the Big 12 doesn't send a lot of blitzes, I thought from some of the stuff that I saw, whether he was playing Iowa State, TCU, some of the blitzes that he did see, I thought he did a really good job being vocal and pointing those things out. He was always communicating. He's a strong communicator. And even just those pre-snap reads are so key for the development of a quarterback and really making your offense operate efficiently. So I like Creed Humphrey a lot. He's a really good reach blocker, probably would be a pretty good fit in a zone scheme. But like Owen said, you know, they do a lot of GT stuff there and all that stuff. So, I mean, probably somewhere in that early second round range is a great fit. Maybe the highest he could go is maybe like Pittsburgh at 24 if they're trying to replace Pouncey, if they feel like he's not going to be there on the second turn and if they value him really high. But I mean, there's just a ton of teams there that would make a lot of sense. I mean, maybe Miami at 36, Atlanta at 35 could really use him as well.
Really clean analysis, not a whole lot of knocks on Creed Humphrey. So we've gone over four prospects, and before we go, I want to do a quick boom or bust round. I just want to know who the biggest boom and maybe the biggest you know, chance for a bust out of this group would be. Miners, Dickerson, Vera, Tucker, and Humphrey. Guys, who seems like the most boom likely? So I'm talking maybe borderline Hall of Famer on an offensive line. Who hits you as the biggest boom candidate? Owen, we'll start with you out of those four.
So I'm also going to take a very short detour back to where we were just talking about. I think in the draft, we as a viewing public or analysts, I think can often get bored of consistency. And I think that Creed Humphrey's probably suffered from that. Like, he was on radars as a freshman and has kind of fallen off and like has never really done anything wrong. People have just like learned about new people and found other prospects that have kind of maybe jumped him. So sure. I just wanted to get that out of the way. I don't necessarily think he's done anything wrong out of that. I'm going to be a homer and I'm going to say Quinn. I mean, considering, right, like he was a very under recruited Division III player that Whitewater really only kind of stumbled onto near the end. He's played 2 years of guard. Really, he played tackle all through high school. And while obviously that's a different tackle experience than he would at college or even in the pros, you know, as far as he's, in my opinion, can just starting to scratch the surface of what he's capable of. And, you know, in an NFL strength and conditioning program, I know he wants to play somewhere between 325 to 330 or so. And with as athletic as he is and however, whatever he's, you know, capable of, I'm not sure that we're quite sure yet. So, this is probably a biased homer pick for me, but I'm going to go with Quinn.
Hey, I love it. We respect it, and at least you call it out. Self-awareness is good, but we talked about him. Certainly makes a lot of sense coming out of a D3 program, and you know, we saw what he's capable of at the Senior Bowl. So I like that pick. Russ, what about you for a boom product out of these four?
Yeah, I'll go with Creed Humphrey. I'll play it safe, and again, I like Quinn. I think that could very well be the pick as well, just off everything that we've talked about. But I'll go with Creed just for the simple fact that, I mean, if he ends up going in the second round, I think he's going to be a tremendous value pick as well. But as we talk about consistency, I mean, this guy could legitimately play 10 to 12, maybe even 15 years in the NFL and just be consistent. And I mean, he played 37 straight games for Oklahoma. There's no reason to why. I mean, it's going to be one of those things when we get 10 years from now, he's going to end up being one of those guys that we see, and he, you know, he's played 145 straight games or something like that. We're going to be like, oh yeah, remember we talked about him on the Pack a Day podcast or something, you know? So
totally. Now let's do the boom. Now preface this with this, right? We're never cheering for kids to fail. We're never cheering for prospects not to, you know, live up to, you know, their full potential. But that's the reality of the National Football League. We talked about Landon Dickerson. He's got the injury issues, had the ACL tear in December. I think that might seem like the obvious choice for maybe a bust product, given that he's had four season-ending injuries in 5 years. But Owen, when you look at a bust candidate of these four, which one maybe might not live up to their full potential?
Yeah, Landon Dickerson's a pretty easy pick for that. I mean, and it's, like I said, truthfully, unfortunately, not much of fault of his own. You know, it's being 325 pounds, playing the most physical position in all of sports takes its toll. And obviously, as we've seen, you know, there's a certain point where your body just can't handle it anymore. And unfortunately for Landon, he's already reached that point, or his body has, I should say, a couple of times. And like I said, it's no choice of his. You know, but as far as, he's the guy here with obviously the biggest pressing concerns.
Yep.
And I think that that's something that he's going to carry with him. You know, as far as like, I think a lot of teams are going to have the mindset, like until he proves to me that he can stay healthy, I don't know why I would believe it. And it's, you know, like I said, it's kind of hard to think otherwise, you know, just because he's only had one of the last 5 years where he's finished the season healthy. And like I said, moving forward, it's not like the NFL gets any easier or less physical. So hopefully for him, his body holds up. Hopefully he never has another injury and plays for 15 years. And who knows, maybe we're talking about the Hall of Fame. Maybe he should have been the boom pick. but, you know, it's simply, you know, it's the low hanging fruit here. But at the moment, you know, like I said, it's just too big of a glaring issue to kind of omit.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Definitely a freak athlete and a lot of fun to watch, but there are those concerns. Russ, are you going to go the same direction or you want to go a different one?
Man, I'll go different just to be different, but I will say I completely agree on the Dickerson there as far as the potential of being just a bust for the simple fact not being able to stay healthy. If he can't do it at the college level, it's hard to believe he can do it at the NFL level. But I'll say Elijah Vera Tucker just for the simple fact that if he does go to a team like Minnesota, and now we can all rip on the Vikings a little bit, but you know, if you go 14th overall, you're going to have pretty high expectations. And if he doesn't, let's say he doesn't stay healthy or he just doesn't grasp what's being kind of thrown his way in Minnesota, and he falls into a similar situation as guys like Garrett Bradbury, who struggled a little bit, Pat Elflein, and all that stuff. So if he falls into that situation, then I think it could be we talk about him in 2 years and say, man, why did they take him 14th overall? But again, I'm just kind of reaching here just to be a little bit different.
No, that's totally fair. And Owen made a good point earlier when we were talking about Vera Tucker, and that is, you know, if a team wants to place him at left tackle, that might be an opportunity for him to fail right out of the gates, and that might be something that you can't rebound from. So
exactly,
we'll certainly be a ton of fun to see how these guys turn out, and it's been a ton of fun breaking it down with you guys here in week one of our draft coverage. A couple weeks left as we ramp up. I mentioned it at the top, 22 days away from round number one of the NFL draft. That'll do it for the Wednesday edition of the Pack-A-Day podcast. Again, if you'd like to go find my new friends on Twitter and follow along with their draft analysis the next 3 weeks, you can do that. For Owen, it's at Reese, R-I-E-S-E draft, and for Russ, it's at Russ NFL draft. If you want to follow along with my daily shenanigans, you can do that too at Alex_Stroh. For Reese, for Russ, I'm Alex Stroh. Thanks so much for hanging with us. We'll talk to you real soon. Peace.